Welcome to the Shift Extension Paramedic Podcast. I'm your host, Sonny, and today with me is Nick. Say good day, Nick.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, Nick, we're here today with the first of what's going to hopefully be many podcasts with the Shift Extension. And, I mean, our aim is going to be talking about things like case studies, research papers, new ideas, basic perspectives from paramedics who are actually out there on the street working. But today we wanted to really focus on something that I think happens quite often in paramedic care, where we get sent to what would be perceived as a low acuity case. I mean, depending on people's own bias or their own experiences, can actually change the way they approach these types of cases. We're looking at these from, I guess, providing a best care discussion and the hope that paramedics in the future shift, I guess, their thought process on how these low acuity cases can present. So you've actually got a case that you were exposed to or personally exposed to. I don't even know if you want to allude
so
to
this is kind of a summary of a few presentations I've seen of this condition, both within the various roles I've done as a paramedic. Certainly the information provided today is does not pertain to any specific presentation. There's no information in there that has any conflict with any patient confidentiality.
Can't be identified. It's like you said, it's a summary of multiple presentations.
Correct. Yeah, and it's more about taking the themes from these presentations and trying to derive some learning for our listeners. That's what we're going to do today.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's kick off with a case. Are you able to introduce it to us? Let us know what we're working with.
Yeah. Awesome. So let's set the scene. Call it Saturday night, and you call to a nightclub precinct for a 24-year-old male, and he's presenting intoxicated.
All right, I'm making notes as I go because obviously I'm getting dispatched here. Yep, keep going.
So it's 11 o'clock at night. You've got a 24-year-old male. He's intoxicated. He's located outside of a nightclub, and his friends have called you because they're worried about him, and he's not normally like this. So you arrive on scene. You find the gentleman sitting on the ground. He's a little bit drowsy, but he's got a patent airway. He's breathing independent for himself. He looks pink, and he's got a strong, fast radial pulse. So, Sonny, what's your initial impressions of this gentleman?
Look, interestingly, I mean, hearing the case here, I know that it's a summary of multiple presentations you've been to. This is actually a case that I could either go to in an ambulance, and this is also a case that I could go to in the private sector.
Yeah, definitely.
Plenty of music festivals and things like that. So, and it's interesting that you said that this is a summary of multiple cases you've been presented with, because you know what? I reckon I've been to a similar case like this.
Yeah.
Probably over a dozen times in my career. So you said he's 24, he's male, it's a Saturday night, it's a nightclub. There's a lot of things that are already, I guess, impacting my own bias on this case. He's drowsy, patent airway, breathing independently, strong, fast pulse, mate. I'm going to be really, really cold and callous here and say, you know what, my bias says he's drunk.
Yep, 100%.
All right.
That's the probably the first thing that comes to the forefront of our minds.
This is dangerous, though.
It is dangerous.
That's my judgment already, I'm kind of skirting some professional boundaries here. But if I've got there that time of night in that kind of environment and that kind of presentation, I'm going to be looking at him thinking he's probably drunk.
Yeah, probably just drunk. Now we're going to come back to this term of just drunk later in the episode.
You're going to make me look silly? That's fine.
No, let's do this. Not at all. So we've done a really basic assessment on this gentleman, and we think he's probably intoxicated, right? So like good clinicians that we are, we're going to do a more thorough assessment through our history taking and also through our physical examination of the patient. So let's add some more information, some more context to this. So we have a chat to the friends. They say they're at a bar, had some drinks. They've all had about the same amount, right? They all went out about the same time. They've all bought rounds for each other. But they do this quite regularly. It's Saturday night. They all work together in an office. They come out on a Saturday night. They have a few drinks. Pretty standard evening so far.
Mm-hmm.
He was well up until the event. He didn't report any complaints. He doesn't have any major medical problems. They don't think he has any allergies. Everything seemed to be going pretty normally for this group of individuals. And then something's happened in the last half an hour to 45 minutes where they've become quite concerned about him. They can't quite figure out or pinpoint what their concern is, but I think he's just not right. He's not himself. Something's wrong.
So they're concerned that this is outside of his normal presentation.
Correct.
They do this quite regularly. Okay. Yeah. So there's some alarm bells there, I guess, for
100%,
any clinician who's there.
So we're going to get some vital signs. You going to write these ones down?
I will indeed. I've got paper, I've got a pen.
Awesome. So his heart rate is 130.
All right, so slightly up.
His SpO2 is 99.
Okay.
His BSL is 6.
Mm-hmm.
His rest rate is 28.
Mm-hmm.
His blood pressure is 170 on 100.
Alrighty.
And because you're an amazing clinician, you've done a manual blood pressure.
I have indeed.
Fantastic. And his temperature is 39.1.
Okay.
You do a physical exam, you note there's no trauma to his head. There's no trauma or grazes or bruises or anything on the rest of his body. He's got a clear chest, equal air entry left and right. His abdomen is soft. From a neurological perspective, he's moving his limbs equally left and right-hand side.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a little bit confused when you start to question him.
Yeah, well, like I said earlier, Nick, I think he's drunk.
Yeah.
All right.
But because you're an amazing clinician, you're going to continue to do a really thorough neurological assessment.
I shall. I will. I'll keep going.
Great. So you have a look at these pupils, and they're a size 7, so they're quite big.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little sluggish, and he has this strange left-to-right gaze,
mm-hmm.
where his eyes are going left-to-right, to left-to-right, rolling around, right?
So there's a couple things here that hopefully I'd be taking note of. One, he's a bit hypertensive.
A little bit.
A little bit.
He's a 24-year-old male.
He is
he's
indeed.
He's fitting well with a blood pressure of 170.
He is indeed, and his respirator's elevated.
Yep.
He's also got an increase in temperature.
Yeah, it's very hot.
Which is unique. So we're going to start looking at some differentials here and probably move away from the fact that this guy's drunk.
Definitely.
Now,
just before we start talking about differentials, you note that he's a little bit fidgety. He just keeps moving his arms, but he'll allow you to assess him.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll also note that there's a tremor in his foot
okay.
when you flex it.
What the
tapping tremor.
I was about to ask you to describe it. So it's a tapping tremor.
Correct.
Just a light tap. Alrighty.
Yeah.
So neurologically, there's some alarm bells or some issues here.
Yeah, definitely.
What are your thoughts?
Oh, I think this person is more than just drunk.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you can tell me about serotonin syndrome?
Oh, there's a lot I can... No, not a lot. There is something I can tell you about serotonin syndrome, which is probably the most likely cause for this patient's presentation.
Now, hopefully there's some listeners out there who are rapidly Googling serotonin syndrome at the moment, because this is something that may go over a lot of clinicians' heads at this point, but there are some alarm bells here.
Yeah, so I think serotonin syndrome is something that kind of gets thrown around when we do our toxicological studies, either in undergraduate, postgraduate, but it's actually quite... It's not an uncommon thing to see. And where we see it the most is in young people who take recreational drugs,
mm-hmm.
predominantly MDMA, right? So MDMA is a reasonably commonly used drug in the party scene and nightclub scene, right? And in either certain doses, certain strengths, or concomitant ingestion with other agents, such as I take an antidepressant, I take a schizophrenic medication like clonidine, it can cause serotonin syndrome.
Just for some of the listeners out there, some examples of MDMA.
MDMA, some ecstasy.
Street names, ecstasy, yeah, excellent.
Ecstasy, I don't know. What else?
Ecstasy was the one that I was going to jump to, obviously, because it's what I've been exposed to the most.
Yep.
It's one of those things that it's important to understand what is going to cause these or what's going to present like this, so we can actually start investing in that history, because the street names are, you know, they're often what they're known by.
Now, we think about serotonin syndrome, well, it kind of is relevant to what ecstasy is trying to achieve. We're trying to increase our levels of serotonin to feel good. That's why people take these drugs. And that's what happened. We have a significant increase in the amount of serotonin. And this causes an overstimulation of the serotonin receptors. And we see a triad of kind of manifestations from this. We see the CNS dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
We see a autonomic disturbance. All right, and we see neuromuscular effects. Okay, and we're seeing these things in this patient. Right, we're seeing this autonomic effect. He's got big autonomic surge. He's hypertensive. He's quite tachycardic. He's got the neuromuscular effects. He's fidgety, right? He's got lots of muscle movement. And one thing that's doing is, A, it's making him fidgety, but it's also contributing to heat production, and it's also contributing to acidosis, okay? What it also can cause is renal failure as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this might be as its own primary consequence of the serotonin syndrome, but it may also happen when we have a big autonomic collapse and we see our patient who's quite shocked, who might have a poor perfusion to their kidneys and start to develop some electrolyte abnormalities. We also might see electrolyte abnormalities in the sense that I've taken some ecstasy, I'm really, really thirsty, I'm going to drink liters and liters of the water and then become hyponatremic,
mm-hmm.
right? And one of the things we saw in our assessment of this gentleman was that the tapping of his foot. right? And what this is a thing called Clonus. You're familiar with Clonus?
I've seen it before.
Yeah. Once you've seen it, would you ever forget it?
No.
No. So how would you describe it?
It's essentially muscle contraction. I've seen it in a number of different ways, but the slight tapping of the foot is probably one of the most common that I have seen. I don't really know how else to explain it from these. One of the things that did come to me, though, and sorry, I'm jumping from left field here. Mm. I've also heard this referred to as mollies.
Mollies?
Mollies.
Oh, the ecstasy.
Yes. Now, this is also one of those redirects where I had never heard it called mollies before. So when I was gathering the history and I was told that the patient had taken mollies, I actually had no idea what this meant.
Yeah, right.
And so it did put me on slightly the wrong path until I could investigate that further and realize that it was ease, ecstasy, everything of the above. So
mollies?
Yeah.
I guess there's lots of different street names for different drugs out there. So
indeed.
Trying to keep up with the lingo.
This was in the US, this one. So yeah, right. Yeah, wow. Non-metric. Mollies. There we go.
There you go. Wow.
So, Nick, in regard to Clonus, how would you describe your approach to this or your assessment of a patient who you suspect is showing signs of Clonus?
So, Clonus can either be inducible,
mm-hmm,
or spontaneous.
So, when you talk about inducible?
So, inducible is whereby I'm going to cause it to happen, right? I'm going to do something to the patient which causes the Clonus to occur.
Mm-hmm.
When we think about Clonus, if you want to define it as a global definition, it's essentially where a muscle contraction is triggered, triggers another reflexive contraction. So I cause a muscle contraction through my assessment, mm-hmm, and that triggers ongoing contractions. And that gives it that really typical tap, 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 tap.
The cyclic, the repetitiveness.
Correct, yeah. Correct. So what we do, the easiest way to do it, is to pick up the foot, okay? Make the limb nice and loose, grab the, take hold of the foot, all right? Loosen the ankle, give it a bit of a circular motion, and essentially quickly flex the foot upwards, okay, around the hinge of the ankle. Flex it upwards, and if that foot starts to tap in your hands, that's a patient who's got Clonus. Mm-hmm. Now, I mentioned before the eyes deviating left and right.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a sign of Clonus. So a patient who's intoxicated, who has Clonus, that makes me suspicious of serotonin syndrome, right? So by adding this into your physical exam, it's going to help you better differentiate patients who are at risk or may have these conditions from someone who's just drunk.
And I should point out at this point too, when we first stepped off the vehicle, our own bias suggested that maybe the patient's drunk, and it's fair to say that whilst we have these suspicions of what this patient may be suffering from, again, this is still impacted by our own bias. And these assessments that you're talking about, these are vital to, I guess, just connecting the dots. At this stage, we're still suspicious of the fact, but we haven't diagnosed yet. It's an interesting condition. I'm curious to know how deadly is it? How lethal is it? How lethal can it be?
It can be very lethal, right? So people go, oh, yeah, okay, so people take drugs all the time, right? Yeah, and yes, they do. And in general terms, not in general terms, but yes, people can take recreational drugs, cocaine, MDMA, alcohol, whatever, and be okay with it.
Mollies.
Okay? Mollies, whatever, no, right? But there is, because it's an unregulated drug, we don't know the strength, the dose, and its ability to have an effect when being taken with other prescription drugs,
mm-hmm,
it can cause life-threatening serotonin syndrome. And that's the thing, is that you can have young, fit, healthy people who are otherwise well, that made a choice to take these drugs, who develop severe life-threatening disease, who can die from it. And that's what's happened. You may be familiar with all the deaths in New South Wales. So between 2017 and 2019, there was 5 deaths of young people secondary to MDMA ingestion and serotonin toxicity as a part of that manifestation in New South Wales, right? These are young, fit, healthy people that made a choice, took these drugs, and died as a result. There was a festival in Vietnam. In one single festival, 7 people died, right? So it's really important that we are aware of this condition and its ability to manifest in what we believe are usually healthy, fit people. Now, we talked a little bit about the clinical manifestations before. Do we have time to talk about that?
I think we do. I know it's probably how long is a piece of string question, but even timeline. You know, we're talking about 7 people dying at a festival in Vietnam. We're talking about several people dying in New South Wales between a time period. If, if there is an index of suspicion, what can be the timeline? How rapid can their decline be?
Or it could be within 30 minutes to an hour after the ingestion.
It's frightening.
It could be hours after. They might take a few at the start and then go and do what they do and then take a few more. And they can deteriorate quite quickly. Someone might present, like I've had patients present, just had a bit of a seizure. They come into our medical area. We assess them. They'll be GCS-14 postictal. The vital signs may look okay. You do a blood gas on them. They've got a pH of 6.9. Mm-hmm. And they're sitting there talking to you.
Mm.
The patient's extremely sick, right? So if we talk about like some of the things that cause these patients to die, they can have seizures, right? So if they've got a belly full of alcohol, they seize, well, you've got all the issues associated with seizures from inefficient respiration, increase in the acidosis, the risk of aspiration associated with having a seizure on top of a full belly. You have the cardiovascular collapse that can occur as part of the serotonin syndrome. And also we talked a bit about the electrolyte abnormalities. So there's a lot of different ways these patients can present severely unwell, and there's a lot of different ways that they can die. So what we need to do is be aware of this condition, be aware of how it manifests, and make sure that we examine our patients thoroughly to look for these features of severe illness.
Mm-hmm. Increase our own index of suspicion.
So let's go back to our first impression. Sick or not sick? So we've turned up, we said, oh, we don't think this guy's sick.
I first got out of the truck. I looked at him and he looked okay.
Yeah.
We hadn't actually conducted a thorough assessment, but my initial assessment with my eyes only and my own bias and judgment said, you know what, he's young, fit and healthy, he's going to be okay.
So, Sonny, this whole premise of just drunk, like you hear it thrown around. I've said it plenty of times on patients. This patient's just drunk. Is that a dangerous term?
I think extraordinarily. One, it can put you on the wrong path in terms of an appropriate diagnosis. And two, even a patient who is generally just inebriated, a patient who is generally just drunk, they still run a very high risk of compromised airways.
100%.
And so again, this notion of a patient just being drunk is still a high risk scene. And this is specifically why now, you know, a lot of these people are not detained by the police. It becomes a healthcare issue because they are a high-risk patient for health.
And people can still have medical episodes whilst under the influence of alcohol. On a previous podcast, we spoke with a young girl who's a paramedic in London now who, during her studies, had a stroke whilst she was out drinking, right?
How old was she?
19 years old.
Yeah. And do you think you'd be assessing a 19-year-old expecting to find that she's suffering a stroke? Whether that be ischemic or hemorrhage, it'd be one of the last things you're considering.
Probably lists on your differential. So, you know, this whole premise of just drunk, I think focusing on that and having that bias of either saying they're just drunk and they're okay or not looking for more information that widens your differential list or ignoring information that starts to degrade that initial hypothesis that they're just drunk, you know, that's where we start to play in that dangerous area.
Where does this cultural bias come from, do you think?
I wonder whether it's because we as a community especially in Australia, we have quite a close relationship with alcohol and ourselves have lived experiences where we've been able to go out and get drunk and be okay. So, you know, and do that multiple times over and over again. Maybe that's subconsciously reinforcing the idea that being drunk is not a serious illness because we've never gotten sick from it.
This is where your own personal experience affects your own bias. And if you're not aware of where your bias sits, you're actually not going to be able to manage it appropriately, are you? And I think as a clinician in any capacity, understanding your own bias is actually the crux of this issue. You know, we've talked about serotonin syndrome and the issues around that. But we're never going to get there properly if we don't actually understand our own bias towards cases.
Mm.
How do you think people can be encouraged to, identify their own bias?
I think the first thing you have to do is acknowledge it and go, you know, I'm a human being. I am going to be affected by bias.
Now, this
we're
is
all
tough.
Affected by bias.
This is tough, hey, because that's self-recognition. What if someone tells you your bias?
Well, it's always better coming from yourself. Yeah. And some people may not have they may not be self-aware enough to take that advice that being given to them by someone else as being true and something that they should reflect on. So, you know, it's always going to be a better growth opportunity if we self-reflect and come to our own conclusions than someone else telling us. So the first thing to do is acknowledge it and acknowledge also that there's certain things that happen that can make you more biased. Like if I'm tired, I'm probably going to be more biased.
Hungry?
If I'm hungry, going to be more biased. So simply by getting into, you know, your work environment, merely by starting a day going, am I biased today? Is there anything that's going to affect my bias? I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I'm having a fight with my missus, whatever. It's important that we acknowledge those. And that's the first step into reducing its effect on our approach.
That's excellent. Mate, we're going to wrap it up there. I think there's some exceptional learning points to come out of this discussion. We were literally sent to look after a perceived drunk patient. And, you know, we've explored a number of aspects from this case and serotonin syndrome as a differential diagnosis. But I think more importantly from even just the clinical aspects of this case, I think this exploration of our own bias is probably the most vital takeaway from it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Mate, thanks so much for being here. That was a Shift Extension Paramedic podcast, and we'll be back in the next few weeks. We'll be looking at more case studies. We're looking at research papers. If you've got anything that you think that we need to discuss or should discuss or want to discuss, drop us a message.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right, mate. Take care.
Cheers.